Pardon the hoitus interruption here, but it's time for Episode 7 of Bruce and Bob Ride the Divide, an ongoing conversation with Islanders Bruce Morser and Bob Horsley as they make their way on gravel bikes from Canada to Mexico on the Great Divide Trail. Before we check in with the guys just after their crossing of the Great Basin Desert this week, I spent a few minutes with their island friends Scott Engelhard and Jeff Good, who drove out to intercept Bruce and Bob in Montana and join them for 8 days or so as they made their way around and through the Tetons of Wyoming. Jeff described a kind of Zen state that came out of the experience.
Life becomes a simple routine that we just don't have in normal life here. You know, it's camping, and it's riding, and it's repeating that every day. And it's almost a meditative thing that the distractions in life go away, and we're literally, on our week, we were without contact with the outside world for days at a time. And that's just bringing life down to its essence, I thought.
And I understand you guys fed the boys maybe a little bit cut above the cuisine that they had been enjoying previously on this trip.
Well, I don't know. I was the chef. It wasn't high cuisine, but compared to the peanut butter and jelly on tortillas, you know, it was a very low bar. And I think I exceeded that bar by quite a bit.
Yeah. Jeff and Scott also described what draws so many people to the Great Divide Trail.
The nature of the scenery out there in the West, I can see why it's actually an international draw, because there are people from around the world that want to experience what the American West is like. And I was blown away by how much is untouched still today beyond just the national parks and forests. Immense ranches and land that the BLM controls that feels like what it was like probably, you know, 100 or 200 years ago.
You could imagine a couple million buffalo running across those.
We talked about that. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Or the Oregon Trail.
Yeah.
Yeah, settlers coming west.
Yeah. Friends and family of Scott and Jeff's back here on the island said the guys were having such a good time riding with Bob and Bruce that they began to wonder if they'd even come home when they said they would.
There were moments for me, I don't know about Jeff, but boy, it was an amazing experience, and I could have gone longer except for the Great Basin coming up.
Yeah.
That was a little scary and just didn't seem like it would be maybe that much fun.
I remember Bob saying, you guys really got to experience the feeling of what it's like to do this route, and that's what we were after.
So you got all the good parts and then got out just before the desert.
Right.
The big concern was the distance of this basin, the heat, and the lack of water.
Mm-hmm.
You may have covered this, but there were only two sources of fresh water along the route, and oftentimes one of those sources is dry.
And I was anxious for them enough that I kept looking at the weather report, and sure enough, it turned into every day was in the mid-90s.
Hey! So with that rather foreboding scene well set, let's find out just how that desert crossing went. And we're joined now by Bruce Morser and Bob Horsley from Rawlins, Wyoming.
Good morning. Hi, Jeff. How are you?
I'm just glad to hear your voices and know that you have the Great Basin behind you.
Yeah, that's a big relief. I think the big news is that by crossing what they call out here the Red Desert, that puts us officially now over halfway.
Hey.
We're over halfway.
Congratulations.
And that's 1,350 miles, and we've also crossed the 80,000 vertical mark, too.
Oh, wow. So you're getting close to halfway with your elevation gain as well.
Yes, we are.
Yeah. Colorado is a difficult-looking vertical situation.
So. Yeah, I've heard Colorado has some elevation gain. So everywhere I go on the island, people are saying, so have you heard from them? Have they crossed the desert? Are they through it yet? Tell us about the crossing.
We ended up camping at this creek site, and a few days before, Harold and Dan, our friends that you'll be talking to in a second, we had communicated back and forth with them to hopefully try to rejoin them. And as it turned out, they showed up at the campsite the night before we were going to be leaving. And we ended up leaving at 3 o'clock in the morning just to try to avoid the heat. And we rode, I think the first day was, 68 miles to 70 miles. And we ended up getting at this reservoir at about 1 o'clock, and it was just hotter than Hades. And we ended up setting up our tents quick, getting shade and jumping in the reservoir off and on all afternoon just to try to stay cool. And then we ended up doing the same thing the next day, waking up at 3 o'clock again and riding to try to avoid the heat. It was a spectacular sunrise both mornings.
I think this is probably a really good time to introduce you to these two guys that have become, you know, we've only known them. I've known Harold now for a couple of weeks and known Dan for about a week. But these guys have become very, very, very close friends. So sitting next to me is Harold Os from Norway. And then sitting across from me is Dan Worthington. He's a Brit and has spent a bunch of time in America, in both L.A. and New York and those kinds of places. So hello, guys. Why don't you join us here?
Hi, how are you?
Harold and Dan, thank you. Welcome.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, it's nice to talk to you. So how long have you guys been on this ride yourselves?
Harold? I have been on this ride for 14 days now. Going quite slow, actually.
he's going faster than we are, but he's been out here longer than us, but we ride really well together, the four of us.
We actually bumped into Harold in Eureka when we first started the trip. He was sitting on the sidewalk drinking tea, and we met him there for the first time. So it's
Jeff, I'm gonna get Dan to weigh in here. What's your take on all this?
I started the 1st of August, so I've been riding similar period of time, 35 days. I started with my uncle. His knee blew out, so we found Harold along the way, walking through a field by a gravel pit. I've been riding with him for a while, and then we sort of reconnected with these guys, Warm River, and it was sort of like, it was a very welcoming experience, I must admit. It's just been amazing to be cycling with these guys.
Have you done a lot of gravel bike trail riding in the U.S.?
I'm from Norway.
So you came here from Norway to do this ride?
Yeah, so I came here for this trip, and actually I did a trip in Costa Rica 4 years ago, and I actually wanted to do a trip in Patagonia, but I don't speak Spanish, so I chose this trip because it's easier to speak to people.
I want to hear more about this experience of getting up at 3 a.m. It almost sounds like you're climbing Mount Rainier, the way they get up in the middle of the night to start the ascent.
It's just like that, Jeff. It's pretty funny. I'm lying in my sleeping bag, and I heard a couple of different alarms go off in different tents. We're not saying anything to anyone else. We're just kind of like busily fumbling around with all this gear and doing this all by headlamp and firing up little stoves to cook oatmeal and package it all together. And it's amazing how quickly we can pack up the bikes and you just pedal off on a bumpy road with your headlamp. Yesterday morning, I fell over within the first 50 feet. But other than that, you just kind of, it's just pretty easy to get rolling. And it's quite the experience to ride along in the dark through a absolutely, utterly dark desert.
So you didn't have a moon still up in the sky at the time that you took off?
We did not. No. We had a Milky Way, and a very, very, very prominent Milky Way, one of the brightest I've ever seen. It was pretty interesting to ride along, and I could tell kind of where the trail was turning, the general direction, by looking up, and I could see that the angle of the Milky Way was changing to the angle of my bike. I began to navigate off of what angle the Milky Way was at. It's pretty fascinating. What'd you guys see?
We saw like a cloud of sort of moisture sort of coming up with the sun. That was pretty incredible.
Yeah, the sunrise was just spectacular, especially the first morning.
We were all saying, weren't we, like, it's like when the light came up, it was like actually waking up from a dream or something. Yeah. The first couple of hours riding through the night felt like something from a dream that we were having.
I think we would all say that this was maybe the most awesome bike ride we've ever been on. Yeah, I think that's kind of a general agreement. Yeah. And I had a very odd sensation that having been on a boat a number of times at night and having the sun come up, that there's a feeling if you're just out in the middle of the water that it's like the water's doming underneath you. It's like everything looks downhill from where you are. front, back, left, right. And it looks like you're on top of a very slight dome of water. And I really had that same sensation with the desert. I look on all sides and it looked like it was downhill. And yet my legs were telling me I was going uphill, but it looked downhill. And then this really odd feeling of when the first little vague red light on one horizon, and it was getting lighter and lighter, I had this wild sensation of like, you felt like you were on a ball because of this doming effect. It felt like it miniaturized the earth and you're on this ball, and you had this real sensation of like, oh, the ball is rotating towards the sun. I'm witnessing the earth rotating. And I realized that is part of the dreamlike feeling we all had, but it was really profound to me.
Oh, this is wild to hear this about this experience, because going into this, you guys had a little bit of trepidation about it.
Yeah, well, the water, the lack of water was a worry, because there are only a couple of sources of water along the route. The one that we landed in the first night, it was a reservoir, and we weren't absolutely sure that it was going to be a reservoir or what we would come upon, but it was actually a small pond, lake, or reservoir, which was great. But I think we all took in a fair amount of extra water just in case something happened, an emergency, or we got stuck or something where we wouldn't be unable to get to the next water spot.
Yeah, we're literally carrying an extra 25, 30 pounds of water on the bike.
Yeah.
But you're not having any rises or any big elevation climbs. So to do 60 or 70 miles in a day, that had to be one of your biggest days in terms of miles.
Yeah, the first day was. For Bruce and I, it was our longest day. Yeah.
And the heat as well. Obviously that's why we were leaving first thing in the morning. But I'd say the last hour when that heat was beginning to increase, you can really feel it. And that was quite a chore for me.
It was a pretty blinding kind of experience. We all felt going into this heat haze, yeah, of just let this time go by. I've got to lay on you another visual from the night changing to dawn that really struck me as something I'll take home forever. Is I'm riding along, we're sort of taking turns being in front or back, or that just kind of this floating haze of bicycles, and I kept looking up and I would see these like a pair of white, faint white lights blinking in front of me, and it was like animal light, animal eyes blinking at you, only really, really dull. Like really, really dull. And they would blink, like blink, 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 and then faint and get fainter and fainter. And then I'd see pairs of these dots. And I'm like, what is this? And after a while, took me a while, and the sun got up a little higher. And these were jackrabbits. They were running away in front of us. And their white feet, when they kick out behind them, would reflect enough light from our headlamps that it had this odd sense, yeah, of these blinking lights and these jackrabbits blasting away into the desert ahead of us. It was pretty awesome.
The other wildlife is we saw, I think it's the largest pronghorn population in the States is in that area. And there were a bunch of pronghorn, antelope. And then we also saw from a distance of wild horses on the ride as well.
Oh, that must have been beautiful.
Yeah, so it's a lot of wildlife around here. And the other night, we heard this coyote singing. They call it the singing dogs here. And one is making the sound and the other is answering. And this will make a very special atmosphere.
We're telling you all of this too, and I'm suddenly realizing we're missing somebody in the room that has to be part of this story. Fortunately, Dan and Harold found this guy in the last jump-off restaurant, which is a story in and of itself, this very old, funky restaurant that did not care a lot about bicyclists, but we all somehow squeezed food out of him. And they found this young guy, Brian Richards, and encouraged him to join us. And, you know, I think Harold and Dan just thought, this is a nice guy. But when Bob and I saw this guy, we thought, oh, my God. This is a young Toby Welch. And it was for any of the people, the Vashonites, who had an experience with the old Harbor School. I actually, last night in a restaurant, got Brian to start talking about Lewis and Clark so that I could bring a video back and show everybody that we indeed did find a young Toby Welch. It was remarkable. In fact, when we got to this hotel we were staying at, motel, he disappeared quickly and went to a laundromat. And then he actually went and got his hair cut. And we're thinking, finally, when we were heading to dinner last night, we sort of said, that person you're trying to meet down the road, this is a woman, isn't it? And he admitted, yes.
Yeah. the truth comes out. So you're far enough into this ride now to do some nice comparative observations between this experience and your earlier coast-to-coast ride. And I ask for a few here, knowing with some confidence already where your preference lies.
Between the two events?
Oh, yeah.
It's just such a different experience. To me, it's being in the landscape that we're in is more consuming than it was when we were on the road. Because the road itself and just seeing cars, in retrospect, more of a pollutant visually than I ever thought. I mean, compared to what we're seeing now, we are just engulfed in this magical, amazing views, you know, all day, every day. So to me, that's the real difference.
Yeah, the cross-country ride for me was sort of a really cool thing to do. And this ride, I'd kind of label it more as epic, where it really is, wow, this is over the top of what I thought would be involved. And as we've all talked about, so much of it is spent in this kind of awe-inspired, like, wow, my God, I did not really know the world looked like this, or that I could feel like this. And things that, like experiences that Bob had mentioned, getting into this campsite, our first day across the desert, the desert's a two-day deal, and getting to this campsite at 1 p.m, and you set up your tent, and there is zero shade. There is no shade anywhere, nothing, zero. And you think, I'm in a field with this unbelievable sun, and I've just got my sort of my tent, which is, if anyone spent time in a little teeny tent with the full blazing heat, you realize it's miserable. There was nothing to do, and you're reduced to this, like, so how do I actually, I can't ride anymore. That's over. So how do I actually survive the next 5 hours till the sun goes down? What do I do with myself? I've had moments where, you know, you think like, well, I'm reduced down to not being able to look at anything, not be able to read anything, not be able to work in anything, not be able to, but not like that afternoon. That was a profound feeling of like, I am just hanging on, this little nub in the desert, just hanging on till dark.
I think another big difference is the terrain that we're on, and the surfaces that we're riding are much more difficult than the road that we did before. This is much more difficult.
So the coast-to-coast ride was more about bagging miles each day, and this ride is more about experiencing miles each day.
That's a good way to put it.
That might be it. One of the other differences is the coast-to-coast ride, we met a lot of local folks, and we're meeting local folks on this ride, but not to the extent, because we didn't camp. We were part of the local scene, every cowboy bar, every little motel kind of thing. This, as you can evidence by our phone call, we're meeting people on the trail. Mm-hmm. And so we're meeting fellow cyclists and having very, very tight relationships. So that's a big difference between the two. I think it's different for me than I thought it was going to be. Are you guys, I mean, does this, when you were thinking ahead to what this ride would be like, what's your reality of it now?
Well, it's hard to say because I don't know actually what kind of impression I would expect to have. When I started this ride, I was very concerned about all the grizzlies, and we have this bear spray all the time. But I have enjoyed the trip so far very much, to try to be in here and now and just enjoy it.
It's interesting the way, like Carol said, at the beginning I was very preoccupied with bears and my fears around bears. And that pretty much all that occupied my mind before even getting out here. It's interesting the way that falls away and then you become more preoccupied about, have I got enough water or have I got enough food or how long can I carry on for at this pace? You know,
the joyousness of some of these gatherings, too. When we came off, Bob mentioned that we got up again yesterday at 3 a.m. and got the ride going. It turned to pavement eventually, which was sort of surprising. And we came across a long, long road that had to have been the set for Mad Max. It just had to have been.
It really was.
Big chunks of pavement gone. And it was a dystopian kind of scene. And it was such a long, hard pull into town. And then we got to Cactus Jack's because Brian is sort of from around these parts, knew of it. And he said, you got to go to Cactus Jack, which was almost hard to find. And we went to this breakfast place, and the general euphoria of sitting around with these guys, these very tight friends now, I actually wrote down what I ate coming off. This was no different. So yesterday for breakfast, I had 2 pork chops, 2 scrambled eggs, I had hash browns, I had toast. I had an order of French toast. And then about 3 hours later, when we got to the hotel, I was dying. And so I went over to the gas station and I ate one of those roller dogs, you know, those hot dogs on the rollers. And I had ice cream cone. I had an egg salad sandwich. I had a chocolate milk. And then a couple hours after that, we went to dinner and we all had these. You cannot believe the size of the burger that Dan ate last night. It was twice his head size. It was unbelievable. How did that feel this morning, Dan?
I sat quite heavily last night. And then this strange feeling of being very hungry again this morning. So
we can't get enough calories.
So tell us about the week ahead. What's next?
Oh boy, it's going to be a lot of climbing. We're going to be getting into Colorado probably tomorrow, but we start climbing tomorrow morning, and there's just a lot of steep pitches and a lot of high elevation passes that we're going to be going through. So
I think we will enjoy it.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah, because now we are half the way, but now it's a kind of a sad feeling that, okay, we are in the second part of the trip. So it's no important to just enjoy the every moment.
We keep Harold around for lots of good reasons. We keep King Harold around because he is the most optimistic person I've ever met in my life.
He'll have a grin on his face regardless of what we're doing.
You can walk into this bar in Atlantic City, this bar restaurant, and it's clear nobody wants the cyclists around and so on. It's just like, it's kind of hostile. The whole thing is hostile, which is rare out here. Almost everybody is supportive. And Harold's like, oh, there is a nice man in the corner. It's awesome. Harold's spirit is unbeatable.
It sounds fantastic. You guys are clearly just lit up with this whole experience, and everybody's enjoying listening to these conversations. I look forward to hearing about where you wind up next week.
All right.
Yeah, I think Steamboat will be in our rear lights by that point, and we're back to the mountain country. It should be cool.
Well, Harold and Dan, welcome to Voice of Vashon. You're now a member of the Vashon community, so you got to come out here and visit at some point.
Pleasure to be a member. I'd love to visit. Yeah, thank you.
Have a great time, guys. Thanks to Bruce Morser and Bob Horsley for keeping us posted every week as they continue along the Great Divide Trail. We'll catch up to them in Colorado next week. Thanks also to their new friends, Harold and Dan, for lending an international flavor to these conversations, and to Jeff Good and Scott Engelhard for sharing a few impressions of their time on the trail. Finally, hearing Bruce and Bob continue to just revel in the majesty and awe that this trip has inspired reminded me of a story Scott told when he and Jeff dropped by the studio.
I was talking to the guy at the bike shop who said he used to work at a bike shop that was right on the Great Divide, and he loved it because everybody that came in was glowing. And we saw Bruce and Bob, and I swear to God, they were glowing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like the dude in the Big Lebowski floating down the bowling lane, except these are dudes that are floating down the Great Divide.
Yeah.
And they're just in this sense of bliss. They're like the Bliss Brothers.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in. I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky. I just dropped in. See what condition my condition was in.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, the sunrise was just spectacular, especially the first morning.
We were all saying, weren't we, that it's like when the light came up, it was like actually waking up from a dream or something. Yeah, yeah. The first couple of hours riding through the night felt like something from a dream that we were having.
I think we would all say that this was maybe the most awesome bike ride we've ever been on.
Hey, I'll take any opportunity to cash in on a Big Lebowski reference. Back with another conversation next week. Till then, that's Hoytus Interruptus. I'm Jeff Hoyt.